This is the Inferno Podcast, the official podcast of UAB Athletics. Blazer fans, this is the place each week to get an inside look into UAB Athletics. This episode of the Inferno Podcast is brought to you by the Alabama Department of Public Health and Pearl River Resort. Welcome into the Inferno Podcast. Landrum Roberts, I'm going to be your host for the next little bit. It's episode 21. Today's rundown, it's always brought to us by our friends at Legacy Credit Union, the official credit union of UAB Athletics. We're going to be joined by UAB head football coach Trent Dilfer. A lot going on since the end of the 2024 regular season via the portal, via staff changes, and one of those staff changes, new defensive coordinator Steve Russ, highly impressive individual. You're going to get to know Steve Russ even better and some of the other exciting news on staff changes and what we can expect for the Blazers on that side of the ball in 2025. All of that and so much more. It's episode 21. This is The Inferno.
As UAB athletes, there's nothing we like more than the roar of the crowd.
Around here, we say we win as one.
One.
One. One.
And to keep cheering for the green and gold.
There's one thing we need from you.
Ask your doctor about an RSV vaccine.
And help protect everyone.
Our littlest Blazers and our most seasoned fans are most at risk from RSV.
Ask about your RSV vaccine today.
So we can all stay in the game.
And win as one.
Today's weekly update is brought to you by the Alabama Department of Public Health. To help protect all UAB fans, ask your doctor about your RSV vaccine today so we can all win as one. It's time for this week in UAB Athletics. Really good news for Andy Kennedy, UAB men's basketball. A couple of wins last week in conference play over Tulane and Florida Atlantic. How about Yaxel Lindeborg? He's named American Conference Player of the Week, averaged 23.5 points, 11.5 rebounds, 7.5 assists, 2 blocks. He shot 80% from the field. Congratulations to Yax. Next, hosting UTSA Bartow Arena coming up Tuesday, January 21st at 6:30. Coach Randy Norton, UAB women's basketball. They get a couple of conference wins, first over Memphis last week and also over Florida Atlantic and Boca Raton. Coming up next, they're going to host UTSA coming up Saturday, 1 o'clock tip at Bartow Arena. That is this week in UAB Athletics. You continue here on the Inferno Podcast.
Trent Dilfer here, head football coach of the UAB Blazers. I want to tell you about my friends at Legacy Credit Union. Legacy began as University Credit Union in 1955 and remains committed to UAB faculty, students, alumni, and fans. Not only do they support the Birmingham community, but they are also proud sponsors of UAB and UAB Athletics. Visit LegacyCreditUnion.com and find out why you should become a member today.
Today's Coach's Corner is brought to you by Pepsi and Viva Health. Welcome back into the Inferno Podcast. It is time for our Coach's Corner. First, UAB head football coach Trent Dilfer. Coach, hadn't talked to you since the turn of the new year, but Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you.
I've been seeing in the headlines and from hearing things around the program, you've been very, very busy.
Yeah, I think the season got busier when the season ended. Yeah, we had to go straight to work, obviously. Incredibly disappointing season. Some tough changes we had to make, but we had to make them for the benefit of the program and our kids, and busy at work with that. That started right away with the hiring of Coach Russ and the defensive staff, and the portal opened at the same time, so you're juggling the portal, and then we do need to give these guys some time off, the coaches. So we went on vacation. I'll put that in the quotation marks because we really didn't get a vacation. We just worked from different locations. And that was relentless on, you know, trying to recruit our own guys that were on our team or launch them. There were some that you're not going to try to keep. You know, they were going to get offered 4, 5, 6x what we could offer them. So celebrate that. Let them move on to a power four and then start replenishing the roster. We at the one point we had 0 returning defensive starters. So we had to rebuild the defense right away as we're hiring a defensive staff. So Coach Russ really obviously took the lead in that. Made some offensive changes and then you're evaluating nonstop. Our recruiting department, along with the coaching staff, worked relentlessly on evaluating players. My guess would be up in the 500s of players we evaluated. Start creating lists, you know, color coordinating, you know, are they difference makers? Are they starters? Are they contributors? Are they depth? You know, however it works. And there's the economic piece of it. So at the same time, you're acting as a general manager because you're trying to balance you're trying to stretch a diamond to a dollar. So how can you stretch a diamond to a dollar and also recruit players that can win for you? So yeah, to say the least, somebody asked me the other day, they said in your 44 year life in football, have you ever seen anything like what you just did? And I said, no. With nothing close to what we just went through for a month period of the chaos and the brokenness of college football, but it's not an excuse. You got to thrive through it. I think we have, you know, again, we won't know until we start playing games, but we feel like we've positioned ourselves to be a winning football team.
What I do on an everyday basis on Jocks 94.5, and we have talked about transfer portal, and when transfer portal and NIL started, it was more content for the show in the off season, and it was good, and it was talking points. This was the first year, though, during this last portal cycle, that it really started making me nauseous. And I mean that in all sincerity, just because of where it is, and then thinking about guys like you and others that are heading up programs and trying to manage rosters. I've known that in the past, but now it just seems like it is really upside down.
Have you ever been in an IMAX theater?
Yes.
The best analogy I could give, combine an IMAX theater but make it 360 degrees and put a goalpost on the IMAX screen and then have it start rotating around the IMAX theater and then try to kick a field goal. You might make it. You might get lucky and kick it right there as the thing turns and it goes through the uprights, but you don't know where the uprights are. There are no uprights. There's no structure. There's no regulation. There's no boundaries. There's no guardrails, whatever you want to call them. There's no rules. And now we've added a dangerous element to it, representation. Not agents. I've had an agent. Yeah, I sit with these kids and these agents. I'm like,
preach.
You realize I've had an agent, right? Like, I've had an agent my whole life. I've had them for the NFL. I've had two. I've had a TV agent. I've had a coaching agent. Like, I have real agents. They work for real companies. They do real representation. And now I'm dealing with like uncles and street agents, and they're brokering these kids around the country. So it's not just that you're dealing with free agency two times a year, unguarded free agency, that you're dealing with representation now. And these people don't know what they're doing. And some are charging 10, 20%. So just so the audience knows, a standard agent fee for an NFL player is 2 to 4%. If you're smart, you negotiate down to 2. If you're not smart, it's up to 4. In TV, your agent fees 7 to 10%. And in marketing, you pay about 20%. So if a marketing agent goes and gets you a Pepsi deal, you're going to pay 20% on that. Well, these guys are using NIL as a marketing agent fee. So then you're helping your other players. I'm not going to use the name, but we had a player that we launched to a Power Five that was going to get, I don't want to say the word, for 20%. We called this player. He has left our program. We love this kid. We know he's committed to a Power Four. We call him and say, here's what you got to do. I've called the head coach, decommit, fire your agent, recommit. And the head coach is on board with this because he doesn't want you to see all your money you're going to make from said school, said Power Four school.
Going to do.
We don't want 20% going to this.
It's ridiculous.
I don't even want to say the word I would explain for this guy.
Yeah.
And so you're doing that stuff too. I did a video diary through this process. It's going to be really interesting when the season's over that it'll show. And I chronicled the stories each day of what I was seeing. I'm like, you would not believe what I just did for the last 45 minutes, or you would not believe what this kid or this agent or whatever just happened, or you wouldn't believe the miracle that Coach Russ and his staff pulled off. Like, it was pretty fun because I could go each night and each morning and be like, oh man, I never seen anything like this. This is what happened today. But it's a crazy world we're living in. I'm excited about how we got through it. By God's grace, we got through it. I kept telling Steve, I'm a man of faith.
Amen.
This ain't going to happen unless God shows up and does some miraculous things here, because we have no chance. On paper, you have no chance at this level, because your best players are leaving for 5X. You're trying to replenish your roster, but those players are brokering deals around the country. And you don't really know. So you really – I said this. This is the biggest thing I used as, you know, we sat with guys in my office late in the OV process and really trying to close them. You're being told value that we can show you is just in money. That's a lie. Value is care plus opportunity plus dollars. We can give you a ton of care and connection. Like, that's what we do. We do it great. We may not have won a lot of games, but we do that really well. We have opportunity. We got 18 starting positions open that you can come compete for, you know? So that's a great opportunity. And that's what this team is going to be built of. They're going to be gritty, tough, blue collar, love football more than what football brings them, unbreakable kids. And we're going to have a coaching staff that's going to elevate them beyond their level that they've ever played before.
Speaking of that, we officially welcome in Steve Russ, the new defensive coordinator for the Blazers. Coach, welcome to Birmingham. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Looking at your background, Stetsonville, Wisconsin, it is labeled as a village there in Wisconsin.
It is. Population at the time was 511, I believe.
511,
on the sign.
A railway town, as I was reading, and I was looking for the most famous, most notable people from Stetsonville. You were right there with Isaiah Stetson, so congratulations.
Thanks. Thank you. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the railway. I think we lived 100 yards from the train tracks, so we crushed many a penny, you know, back in our kid days, putting the pennies on the train tracks and playing chicken with the train and all that kind of stuff. So it ran right by the little field that we played football in. So it's funny that you say that. But yeah, population 511, it was great. You know, grew up on a dirt road across from a farm, small house. I know we took our kids back, you know, when we go back, and they always marvel at the fact that 8 people lived in that home.
Wow.
House was built, I think, in like 1919 or something, right after World War I, and it had a hand-dug well in the basement. So literally, you opened up the plywood and looked down in the big hole, and there was the water like 30 feet down. Now, looking back on it, it's no wonder why it didn't taste very good. You know, and then you put 8 people in a house. The well ran out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And then they had to, we lived on land, though. It was nice. You know, we had the ball field, you know, the baseball field, the wiffle ball field was set up a certain way, and the clothesline was just far enough away where that was the home run. And then we had a long part that was the football field. And then we had our fort over here that was a little old shed. But when the well ran out, they had they drilled a modern one then, right? Went down and the water tasted better. But they drove the big well drilling trucks and stuff across our football field, across our, and it was wet during the time. And there's like the big dually ruts and everything. Oh, and they just destroyed our, we were so bummed. But yeah, they've since paved the road. And they actually, the village has a, not city, village water now. So, they still use the well for like water in the garden and things like that. My parents are still pretty old school, but it was a great way to grow up. You didn't know any better.
Right.
You know, you look back on it and you got kicked out of the house and you were like able to come out or come back for lunch. And then you got kicked out again. And then they would holler at you for dinner. But I mean, we'd be miles away in the woods or on bikes or whatever, you know, and it just, you know, growing up that way really doesn't exist much anymore. So I really enjoyed it.
It's negative 10 degrees this morning in Stetsonville, by the way.
Yep. That's my dad's in hog heaven. So he's like, I can always put more clothes on. I don't like being hot. I can't take more clothes off. So like I said, he's old school. It's, you know, grew up, you know, fishing and hunting and ice fishing, and it just kind of repeat. And it was fun, but, you know, you also did it to put some food in the table. My dad was an educator. Mom didn't start teaching until the last kid was out of school. They had 2 sets of twins, so you get to 6 real fast. And everybody had a room, so we had 3 little tiny rooms upstairs. They had to put an addition on the house. That helped. And then we got a second bathroom. So that was like big time.
Wow.
And so everybody got a room. But I got my youngest brother was, I think, when I was a senior in high school, he was in kindergarten. And we shared a room. But at least I didn't have to share a bed. So two of my sisters, they had to share a bed. And twin brothers, they had to share a bed. So I at least didn't have to share a bed. And wow. Going into my senior year, my little brother, he loved living with me and bunking with me. But they said, hey, look, you're going to be a senior. There's enough room that we can take Tyler's little bed and put it with Sam and Ron. But you have to tell him. I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. So I go in and I'm like, hey, Ty, great news, man. we're going to move your bed today in with Sam and Ron, and you're going to, you know, I'm trying to do my best sell. And his lip starts quivering, and it broke me down. Oh, man, I'm just teasing.
You're sitting with me.
I let him stay, and it was great because, you know, you'd be sitting there and be like, look at him and be like, he's got a really creative mind. He's doing great in life. He's a national sales manager with Stryker Medical now. I'd be like, Ty, tell me a story. You know, and here's this kindergartner, just blah, blah, blah. He would just start making up these stories and had a good time. A lot of good memories.
From Wisconsin, you go to the Air Force Academy, mm-hmm. and you play football there. You get drafted by the Broncos in the 7th round. Two Super Bowls, right? Super Bowl rings.
Right place, right time.
So one more than coach, but now a collection is at three total.
I'm 1-0 against them. We played against each other in college.
I can't live that down.
Okay.
1-0 is 1-0.
Yeah, that's right. And think about it, the whole Fresno.
92, I believe.
Yeah, 93.
Yep.
93,
yeah,
huh?
Coach, that you were rocking and rolling that year.
He
they
did
were
have
a juggernaut. I think we held them to like 33 instead of 50 that they were averaging.
That's true.
You coached in the league too. And recently, I know last year, a special assistant there at Air Force and the Academy, but you coached there at the Carolina Panthers, Washington mm-hmm. Commanders. Now stepping back in, both feet into college football. And you had had previous stops where you had coached the college level. Mm-hmm. I know University of Ohio, Wake Forest, and there were other stops along the way. But just talk about kind of immersing yourself back into this chaos that is college athletics.
Yeah, so obviously blessed and grateful to be here and for the opportunity. Coach has been awesome. You talk about being vertically aligned with your head coach. That's what you look for, especially as you get older as a coach. You know, when you're a younger coach, the patch on your shirt, you know, it's all where. And as you get older, it becomes a lot of who. So where can be great, but if the who's not right, it's just not, it's not enjoyable. So the who was right. You talk about, you know, coach still wants to be relational in a very transactional world. And that's becoming very, very rare because both of us feel like we have a higher calling. But, you know, going back to your question, you know, being able to draw on the chaos. When I left Air Force to go to the NFL, you know, first of all, Air Force doesn't handle with the portal. They don't have NIL. So that was just in its infancy, though, you know, stages when I left to go to the NFL. So when I get dropped back, literally into the whirling dervish of the portal. So I'm learning it. Obviously, I've heard, you know, a lot of horror stories and whatnot from my friends. But what was great was that Coach was able to handle the big picture stuff and allow me and the staff to get into the weeds and block out that kind of stuff. So I said, okay, we know that there are flaws to this thing, but that can't keep us from being able to do the job that we have to do, and that's be able to bring in the right players, the best right players, not just the best players. And we went to work on that and kind of blocked out everything else that was going on. Coach was a roadblock with all, you know, just plowing through all the stuff that, you know, is not fun. He had to shoulder those types of things. But that allowed us to fall back on, like I fell back on part draft, part free agency, the wonderful work that we were able to do. You know, with Coach Rivera, it was very collaborative, which a lot of NFL places wasn't. And because it was collaborative, that gave me a look at the personnel standpoint. So where you could put like your GM hat on and working with our scouting department. So those things came naturally. And then obviously there's some landmines and things you had to navigate, but we just focused on that, treated it like free agency, treated it like the draft, you know, when you're interviewing players, trying to find out information about them, because we want to find the best right guys. And you needed to dig. You needed to dig the character piece. And you were trying to do this very, very quickly.
Right.
And then you had to be able to dig with the young man, too. So you had part recruiting hat on, but you had part interview hat on. Because we would tell guys very, very frankly, hey, look, this is what we expect. This is what we're looking for. This is what we need from you. Now, this is what we can do for you, but this is what we need from you. And if you don't like that, don't come. And there were some jaws at times that dropped because we were very frank, downright blunt with guys that, look, we don't want the wrong guy here. And that's not saying you're a bad guy. You're just not looking for that. If you're not looking for this, don't come. So the other thing I think I fell back on, so, you know, the draft, free agency, working with the personnel side, I fell back on some of the stuff we did at the Air Force Academy, not just as a player that I saw, but, you know, I coached there for 6 years at a stint before going to the NFL and then back as a special assistant where you kind of had a drone's eye view. I wasn't down in the weeds. I had more of a drone's eye view. To be able to say that, okay, there may not be things that we have, okay, that others have, or as many of them, but we'd have a lot of strengths. We have a lot of positives that we can offer these guys, okay? Let's make sure we highlight those and see if we can't overcome those other ones. Hey, there's no reason to, you know, to say, hey, this, we don't have this. Nobody cares, right? We have a job to do. So talk to the scouts and the staff. They did a wonderful job of saying, hey, let's accentuate this. And it's real. And we made it real. And I think it, you know, we'll see when we get on the field. But I really like the guys that we've brought in, especially the makeup of them. You know what I mean?
Schematically, what can we expect from you and what we're going to see on that side?
I get that asked a lot. It'll be very, you know, it's an NFL model for sure. So, you know, you've got a front that's going to get off on the ball, penetrate, be disruptive. It'll be multiplicity up front right there, but it's going to be very, very aggressive. You're going to have linebackers, I hope, that are very, very mobile, flying around, getting downhill, smart, tough, accountable. In the back end, you know, we want to be able to protect the big play, you know, keep the ball from going over the top of our head, but at the same time challenge all throws. And that's the happy medium, right? That's the sweet spot of college football right now, or in really football in general. Can you challenge throws so you're not just giving free access to the quarterback all day, making it look like 7-on-7 where he's back there having a picnic? But at the same time, can you stay vertically secure and make an offense earn it? Okay. And I don't like the term bend, not break, because we don't want to bend, but at the same time, we're going to make somebody earn it. And in the process, get you to, you know, to make a mistake, get off the field. We're going to fly around, take the ball away, et cetera. But really at the end of the day, what we do is important. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to minimize that. But if we don't do the how and the why first, we won't be very good. So what I want our defense, if you watch us or turn on the TV or throw on film or whatever, I hope you see us, you know, playing with great energy, great enthusiasm, love and passion for the game. We said a lot in the recruiting process, you know, just ask guys point blank, hey, do you love playing football or do you love being a football player? Because there's a huge difference. And so the enthusiasm, the love, and the passion of the game, and really having guys be joyful when other people make plays. Because a lot of times it's our job to make sure that they understand they didn't make that play in a vacuum. You know, I've got great clips in the recruiting process that I would highlight trying to show recruits. This is our philosophy. And shoot, I remember one, Cole Holcomb picks the ball off Dak Prescott. He runs to the end zone for a touchdown. And I literally highlight the three other guys that make that happen. Before for Cole to be able to make that play. So that's just an example. Next, we want to play with a lot of confidence. You know, and to do that, you have to be great teachers. You have to be great planners. You have to be able to take the stuff that you're doing in the meeting room. You got to be able to drill it in practice. You have to have them be really foundationally sound, technically sound. And then you also have to create a learning environment that's not fearful, that's accountable, but not fearful, because they have to be able to go out and feel like they can make mistakes. I want guys playing fast. I do not want guys kind of going slow and then being right. I want guys going really, really fast, and then we can dial them in, and they can help themselves dial it in. Now, we want to be very, very flexible with that, but at the same time, you want to be very, very rigid with your vision of the defense, and then you want to be very rigid with the things that you can control, your attitude, your preparation, your efforts, your body language. What kind of person are you off the field? How are you as a teammate? Those types of things we're going to be very, very rigid on. So we want to be flexible and teaching oriented when it comes to the football pieces. But the things that we can control, right, that how and why, we've got to be very flexible with those things as well. And then we want to be disciplined. We got to play with discipline in this day and age. Well, it's discipline eyes, discipline with our technique. We have a job to do. Again, accountable but not fearful. And then lastly, we want to develop a spirit of perseverance. Okay, we want to be a very, very resilient bunch. We want to play with that resiliency, because in college football, I mean, offensive guys like Coach Dilfer and whatnot, they know how to move the ball. I mean, this is a very, very much an offensive world that we're living in right now. So it also frees up, you know, analytically, go for it on fourth down, taking chances. And if it doesn't work out, you know, for our offense, they go for it on fourth down. Oh, well, let's go. We've got to be able to use adverse situations. We give up a big play. We're going to give up big plays. It's going to happen. We don't want to give them up very often. Down the ball and let's play again. You know, sudden change, fourth down, 2 minute, end of the game, whatever it may be, we need to view those opportunities, I'm sorry, those instances, those challenges as opportunities to go out there and A, either limit points, because points win you football games, or B, get the momentum back. Because momentum is a real thing in sports. It's a real thing in football. And a lot of times when something good happens for the other team, they start getting that momentum going. It's our chance to go out there and snuff that and really throw the momentum right back at you. I mean, how many times do people get down in the red zone and they come away with a field goal, or even worse, they turn it over? And now in the analytical world, when they go for it on fourth down, it's another opportunity for us to take the ball away and give it back to our offense. So those are kind of some of the things that I hope, are, you know, the five things that I really want us to see us playing with. And then after that, the scheme will take care of itself. I really believe that. So we'll have an exciting scheme. You know, we'll mix different things. But at the end of the day, our focus right now as a staff is obviously learning what we want to do, getting that installed, but making sure that our guys are controlling the controllables and doing the how and the why.
You know, something and that Coach Russ just kind of touched on, Coach Dilfer, and I'm not going to make this a blanket statement across the board for all programs, but I do think one of the, if you want to say, intangibles or the hidden stats is buy-in now with the nature of the transfer portal and NIL. And you can see it with certain teams,
actually.
And there is a genuine love, and they love playing for one another, and they bought in, and they love playing for their coach, and that could be advantageous. They stay in age because you then will look at, on the contrary, you will see the team where you got a bunch of me guys, and you got a bunch of independent contractors, and they are just looking for the next deal, and hey, if we win, we lose. Hey, I've got a million in my bank account, my portfolio. I think that's starting to really kind of reveal itself with some programs. So
it's
that,
massive. Yeah. And that's why, and Coach Russ was talking about this, it's why we interviewed, we didn't recruit. And I'll never change. I will never change. When you recruit, you're putting the power. You're putting the power in the player and the representation to con you. Because they can say one thing, right? But then they might show up, and this is what happened to us last year. I thought we killed the portal this time last year. Right, new length and strength and athleticism, like really good players. But I got conned because we recruited them instead of interviewed them. And this year, thanks to Coach Russ, I mean, there was a hard conversation with the staff before we hired Coach Russ and the rest of the defensive staff.
Sure.
Because I had to tell them we've done it wrong. And that was offensive to many of my coaches. You know, and they did not like to hear that. But I've said, guys, the proof's in the pudding, 4-8, 3-9. You know, like, is it all their fault? I mean, we've had some culpability in this too. We haven't taught them well. We haven't held them accountable. And we brought the wrong people in the building. So it's my job to get them out of the building, which we did. And now it's our job to not make the same mistake again. And one of those mistakes was recruiting instead of interviewing. When you interview the NFL model, and that's why we have primarily an NFL defensive staff, is now you're digging into them, and they're gonna want you more than you want them. And that it was crazy to watch, but it's true. And you really had to trust. I had to trust my NFL experience. I had to trust their NFL experience. But like at the end of the day, we're gonna lose some players that we really like as players. But he kept saying the term right, and that was the first thing I told the staff, and I told Coach Russ and every defensive coach we interviewed was, we're not looking for the best player, we're looking for the right player. Right? We're not looking for the most talented team, we're looking for the right team. Because we've had talent, we've had good schemes, we haven't had it right yet. And that's on me, and I can't afford to not fix it. So it was a really important thing that he said when he started challenging these players in the vetting process, even before they show up. And then me being transparent with them on the front end, like, don't get on that plane if you think you're coming here for a bag. Don't think you're coming here. Don't come here if you think you're coming for a guaranteed spot. You know, we have other defensive guys we recruited. I want to say 9 of them or more were starters last year at their colleges. So they're expecting to be starters here. Well, we're 3-4 deep now with ex starters at positions. So there's going to be incredible competition for playing time. But they had to sign up for that, and they knew that. some came in even saying, oh, yeah, I'll be a starter. And they sat with Coach Russ and me and like, no, you got this wart, and that wart that you got to fix before you can play at the level we're expecting to play. You would think that would get them to stand up and walk out. Instead, they were more like, I've never been talked to this way before. You know, thanks for being honest. Thanks for at least telling me who I am as a player, because I do want to be better than I've been. We don't have one player recruited that says they're a finished project, that says they're good enough to reach the dreams that they have. So I thought that was a really important part of this process that I wanted to, you know, build off of what Coach Russ said. But this has been, and again, we won't know. And this theme for me, I'm going to do, 12 of these podcasts before the season or something like that, at least. I don't know. I will tell everybody, I don't know how good we're going to be. I have no idea. I haven't seen half these people play in person. I haven't been around them. I haven't broke bread with them. I haven't done hard things with them. I haven't seen them go through adversity. There's so many things we have to experience together before I know if we're going to be any good. I do know the building as of today, and we still have players rolling in this week, will be the right building for once. And I think that was my ultimate job, was to make sure the building was right to give us a puncher's chance to then go contend for a conference championship.
And the expectation, not too much, but your service academy, as not only as a student, as a player, as a coach there, but you're going to know how to diagnose Navy and Army.
Well, and Rice, at Rice, they just hired a triple guy too.
Okay.
We have three triple
Rice
teams.
Too. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Trust me, that was in the forefront of my thinking with
interviews. I know. You're no dummy. And I knew that there was a method to that, to what Coach just said. You're going to have some other guys that you have familiarity with that are going to be joining you as a part of the defensive staff. If you could just kind of go through, or Coach, if you want to go through
maybe some of those personnel changes. Yeah, I'll go, he can talk about or not.
Exactly. Okay. I don't want to step in it.
Let's be safe.
So I think as we interviewed, and I'll let me brag on Coach Russ real quick. I talked to Steve Irvine yesterday about this, and he dug deep into like, okay, what was your process like? And I said, well, I had a few things I had to do. Number one, I had to interview a lot of people. The first time through, I didn't interview a lot of people. I went with relationships or recommendations.
Which is understandable, by the way.
It was, but it was a mistake. If anybody ever asked me, hey, I'm going to go take a college job for the first time, what's one thing to do? I'd say, don't trust any of your previous relationships. Don't trust any of the people in your network. Don't listen to anybody. Be with them. Interview people. Spend time with them. Do multiple interviews with them. Ask probing questions. Ask challenging questions. Try to trick the coach. Try to lead him down a road that he may not want to go there. See how he gets out of it. Like, you have to be a professional interviewer, and I was not the first time through. I was on offense. It's interesting. I was on offense. I wasn't on defense. Shocking, right? So this time through, I had a list of things. I'm not going to get all into it, but I wanted to talk to at least 20 people. So I did at least 20 phone interviews, and I think I did 12 follow-up Zooms, and then I did 8 in-persons. So Steve went through 3, you know, different series of interviews. And I had great candidates. And I would say I would have been comfortable before I met Steve hiring 4 to 5 of them. Really good. Like, would have made us better. What's jumped out about Steve was not just his football acumen, not just his leadership qualities. I mean, these things are obvious. You've heard him talk for 5 minutes and all those things pop, right? If you're listening, you don't hear those things. You don't know anything about football. But it was his parental kind of nurturing with also having a hard accountable edge to it. Like, you have, and I tend to fall too much to the nurturing side sometimes, and lose the edge. Maybe it's a father of daughters.
Yeah. You're a bit of a papa bear sometimes.
So, yeah. I've noticed. So he has this incredible ability to nurture and see what the person and coach can be. But then that edge of every moment of every day being able to hold people in line on that path. And that popped at me. The triple option thing was important, but he's not the only person that's ever defended the triple option. You know what I mean? It's not like he showed me something on film like, oh, God, we're going to stop every triple option team. You know,
sure.
It was more the mentality, his spirit of perseverance, right? The unbreakable mentality. You know, getting kids to play fast and free. If you hear him talk, and you're in our building, the fact I've had offensive coaches say that have heard him talking, like, it sounds like you. You know, like literally if we stood up and we didn't rehearse it and I had a team meeting and he had a team meeting, you're going to have 97% of the same thematical things come out. We might say them a little differently, but thematically it's going to be the same thing. So when he talks about this vertical alignment, it was like literally I wanted to cancel every interview after, but I still, to hit my threshold of interviews, yeah, I still had a few after. So I was really excited about that. And then to be able to hire the quality of staff. So what I'm getting, that long-winded answer of saying, one of the things that really impressed me too is the network. Because when you're hiring a coordinator, you're also tapping into his network to be able to hire position coaches. And I had told every candidate that I interviewed, I'm not going to make the same mistake I made with Sione. So I've set Sione up for failure. And I hope everybody out there understands this is not a friend defending a friend. Sione's a great football coach, that the head coach set him up for failure because I went and hired his defensive staff instead of him hiring his defensive staff. So he ended up with a bunch of coaches that weren't his coaches. And that created a dilemma within the building for 2 years that we just couldn't overcome. We tried to fix it. We tried to put Band-Aids on it, but we just never could fix it. So I told each candidate, I'm like, you're hiring your defensive staff and I'll oversee it and I'll make the final check off, right? They got to be my kind of people. Well, when you see the type of network he has, let's talk about Brent Wiesemeyer. Wiese, everybody just know him by Wiese. I mean, the number one guy Russ talked about. He's like, I asked every candidate, I'm like, is there one guy? If there's one guy that you will die on the hill for, you have to bring no matter what. And it was Wiese for Russ. And I mean, Wiese has been, started one of the best high school programs in the country, has been a college coach. He's been a two-time NFL coach, has coached the back end, has coached the line, can coach any position, probably on the field. He coached McCaffrey at Valor High School. Like, he's an offensive coach. I mean, he knows everything, right? I mean, he's kind of a wizard. I would say that. He's kind of a wizard when he talks about football on both sides. Like, I went into him.
Kind of like Rain Man?
No, it's more just like he just sees it, and it's simple to him. Like, things that are complicated, he just, that's not that hard. Like, come on. And you're like,
Matt Damon and Good Will Hunting.
Yeah, that's a good one. Okay. That's a great, because like the other day we were talking about something offensively and he just, I'm like, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I just walked out of the office. Like, it just makes perfect sense. He connects with kids. You should have seen him in recruiting. Oh my gosh. You know, we get him at a dinner table with the family and he just connects with everybody. So Wiese was an unbelievable hire. There's one we'll announce here in the next couple of days. That's, I can't talk about it for HR wise, but another NFL guy, 14 years coaching the NFL, pedigree like you can't imagine. But that's just not the reason.
You'll know the name, by the way.
Yeah, another coach that connects really well with players, that has incredible football acumen, but can take the complicated and make it very simple. Also, an evaluator's eye. You know, when you hire NFL guys, you get an NFL evaluator eye. You don't just get a, and I'm not knocking, but you don't get the more remedial, oh, he's long, he's fast, you know, he's twitchy. Like, you get a little more, right? You get, well, look at his eye work. You know, his feet aren't matching up with his eye. Look at his
arm. You're using up my entire glossary of terms.
All right, look at his hand placement. You know what I mean? Like, look how he diagnosed. He was a little hesitant here because he wasn't sure on the guard movement. Like, he's got to be trained better here. You know, look at his false steps there. Like, that allowed him not to be able to do the thing he needed to do. We can fix that. You can't fix this. You know, my 14 years tells me that's something that you probably can't fix. This little thing over here that people panic about, we can fix that in a couple weeks. You know, so it was refreshing to start hearing those things. The work ethic, the grind. I mean, we're on vacations. And I'm, you know, we're on this group. We have a defensive text thread. We have a staff text. We have an offense text. So I'm balancing all these text threads, and I'm getting Coach Russ running his defense. It's like, okay, 0600 staff meeting, defensive staff. We're going over the board. We'll do 90 minutes of this. We'll do 90 minutes of that, and we'll finish the 30 minutes of that. And then I'm watching the Google Sheet as I'm kind of listening to the Zoom meeting, and I'm seeing boards change, and I'm seeing evaluations go on. And My Christmas break was my phone in my pocket with my headphones, my laptop, and chasing Decker around and hoping he doesn't break everything in the house. But I mean, to watch the work ethic and the grind over the Christmas break was just a level of professionalism you can't explain. And then to have some coaches, you know, we had some really good defensive coaches that I said, Steve, you do not have to hire these guys, but they're in a contract to January. You kind of have a free tryout with them, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, was it five guys? We're in the building and working, and we're able to audition and really proved their substance. In front of the new coordinator, and you saw them rise. You know, you saw their ability elevate a little bit with stronger, more accountable leadership, more direct leadership. So I don't even know why I started talking about this, except when you're going through the process, it's more than just hiring a coordinator, right? You're hiring a head coach, right? If this thing's done right and the head coach doesn't have an ego, you want to hire people better than you. I said that when I hired Mort. I said I was looking for somebody offensively that knew more than me. And that was really hard to do. I've been around offense a long time. And Mort was the guy that was like, okay, he challenges me. He makes me better. And Steve does the same thing. You know, he makes me better as a head coach. He challenges me in a lot of different areas. And I want that. John Jones did that with special teams last year. That's why we're so successful. So now I feel like we have three coordinators that are also head coaches of their units, and that I can lean on for head coaching things as well. And it frees me up to do the minutia that they don't really want to do nor signed up to do, so they can go do their jobs better too. And I think, again, the right building, right?
Sure.
A lot of it is just getting the right building in place. The overflow of that should make it a much better product on the field on Saturdays.
You know, and before meeting you, Coach Russ, and you try to, you know, leadership styles and how guys coach, and sometimes how they operate in this kind of setting is not how they operate as a coach. So I didn't know if we were going to get maybe the mentality of a Will Muschamp as a defensive coordinator and being a fiery guy, or as a player like we saw with a guy that you guys know, Bill Romanowski, and how would you describe
what a pain in the ass to play against, by the way.
First of all, are you sideline? You going to be in the box? Have we decided that?
No, I'm a sideline guy.
You're a sideline guy.
I think you lead from the front. You know, falling back on just all the leadership things that you learn at the Air Force Academy. And then obviously developing them as a coach. There is times when you need to be able to look your players in the eye. And there's give and take, right? And I know a lot of people, they like the box, take some of the emotion out of it, whatever. That's just, it's a little sanitary for me. I'm an in the weeds kind of guy. And very much so, you know, people sometimes get carried away, and I have before as a coordinator. Don't get me wrong. I live in a glass house. I'm not throwing stones. And to say that I'm not going to get animated, I'm very, very excitable. But at the same time, you know, when we were at the academy with leadership's lessons and talking about developing a spirit of perseverance and modeling that for your players, you can't be losing your you-know-what, you know, every time something bad happens, but then go tell those guys, hey, man, you got to keep your cool. We got to just be firemen. Right. Go put out the fire. And then you got to be able to model that behavior. And I was telling Coach on the interview, the big interview that we did initially, that, you know, they would play video or audio recordings, excuse me, of pilots that had smoke in the cockpit. Their plane is on fire. I mean, they're doing everything they can to put this thing out and be safely back on the ground. And it was amazing how cool, calm, and collected they were. They you don't rise to the occasion. You know, this is very common saying, you don't rise to the occasion, you fall to the level of your training. And that was their point. And here this person was, you know, whatever, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and it stopped. The guy hit the ground. You know, all the way down to the ground, I get emotional even talking about it. Or they'd play, you know, the airstrike, the guys that would call in the airstrikes. There's artillery landing all over these guys. And it's just like me and you talking here on a podcast, you know, cool, calm, collected. And that doesn't mean that you don't get in and fired up for the guys and all that. But there's a time when there's a time to make sure that you're cool, calm, and collected. For your players, for the group, for everybody else, they're relying on you to think clearly, to act clearly, to set that example when things are going bad. And that's the challenge. And that's what I want to do. And then if you need to rally the troops or really say something to an individual on the sideline, you're not trying to tell somebody else, you're not trying to pick up a phone. And sometimes you can get the, you know, you can get the read of the room, so to speak, by looking at the players in the eye, you know, and I don't want to give that up. So you have to give to get, right? And a lot of things in life, I think you gain, for me personally, I gain a lot more being down there than I do up.
I really like this guy.
Yeah, he's hard not to like.
I really do.
You'll like the rest of the staff too. It's a really good
guy. And to Coach's point on the staff, I mean, we, you know, Coach enabled us to hire, I mean, an awesome staff. I really enjoy working with these guys, and I'm a big Ryan Holiday fan. The book "Ego Is the Enemy," and you got to blend that because pretty much everybody in that room can do my job, and that's the beautiful thing of it. You know, guys can, you know, Coach is talking about having coaches be able to challenge you to be better. There's guys in that room that challenge me to be better every day. You know, and it starts with these, but Ryan Lewis Sr. has been a coordinator, a really highly successful coordinator. I think CJ Cox is a coordinator in the making. He's super sharp. And then the coach that we, you know, not to be named is you know, as fine of a defensive line coach as you will see. And he's also a really big picture thinker when it comes to not like, hey, this is what we're doing in the back end or whatnot, yeah. but the, just people. And reading a room and just being a really incredible presence, that's big time. And so, but at the same time, you're like, look, Coach hired me to do a job. So I know everybody has all this experience and they're doing all that. And I want to be able to be as inclusive as I can and take that all in and provide as much ownership for everybody as they can. But at the same time, you know, we had a saying, when in command, command. So, you know, sometimes I start going, I'll listen to some things. We've got to make sure that we're staying on task, staying focused, because we do have a short timeline as far as getting everything ready and installed and everybody on the same page. And you have to be able to say, hey, this is what we want to do. This is how I want to do it. And I know everybody's done it different ways, and there's a lot of good ideas out there. But for the sake of the group and the building and us, let's make sure we're doing it this way. And then we can revisit maybe after spring ball. So the analogy I've been using with the guys is we're going to build the house. The house is going to be done. The house is going to be ready to move into. And then once after spring ball, we can maybe change the drapes or paint a room or interior decorate, those types of things. And that's when we can kind of get creative. So, you know, I'm hemming and hawing on something right now that, you know, the words when in command, command, make a decision, keep popping into my brain at 5 a.m. this morning because I've been, you know, kind of doodling on something for a while. So, Those are challenges, but to have a staff like that is remarkable, and it's a credit to Coach.
Do I have time to brag on this kind of recruiting cycle on some other people too?
Yeah.
Because if we're good next year, people should go back and listen to this, and everybody's going to want to give you know, the coaches credit. Yeah. And there's four people that I have worked as hard as any humans I've been around in football: Brendan Donovan, we call him Gator. Lena Lupinetti, our GM, Braden Curry, and Colt Jamison. They're our recruiting department. I call them the personnel department. I don't even know. I don't know if we can quantify how many players they've watched.
No,
since.
There's no way.
They started their list with a couple weeks left in the season. I don't even know. It's got to be in the thousands. And we don't just watch 13, 20, 30, 40 clips. I mean, they're watching hundreds of clips of these players. Watching their entire playing careers, and then going back and watching high school film. Like, it's endless of what these guys have done. So I want to give them a shout out for their work ethic.
Amen, Coach.
I mean, they had no breaks. They had no time off. Like, they were literally on watching players 16 hours a day through Christmas. I mean, I know they were watching players on Christmas because I was getting texts. I was at Christmas dinner with my family getting texts from Gator about players. Hey, when the family goes to bed, watch these guys so tomorrow morning we can talk about them. I mean, it was relentless how hard these guys worked. The buy-in, you know, it has been phenomenal. So they need to be recognized. And so often you hear when you're reading 247 or, hey, Georgia's recruiting department. Like, who is that? Like, I don't know who these – we have four humans that – they don't make a lot of money, you know, and they just sit there and they grind and grind and grind and give coaches the ability to then evaluate and sign off. They have conviction yet no egos, which I think is really important. Leno does so many other things. So Leno had to be the bridge to the representation before I got to him. So he dealt with, if I dealt in the trash can, he dealt in the gutters, you know? And so that, I mean, I don't know. I don't even have the words to explain how proud I am of that group. And if we do turn this thing around, which I believe we're going to, they're going to be a huge, huge part of that.
Yeah, it was interesting coaches saying this because, you know, I talked about, hey, I fell back on free agency in the draft and what I had to, like, it took me like 1 or 2 days to realize in free agency, free agency, they'll come off the board, but in the draft, they don't come off the board until they start drafting. And here we are over, quote, Christmas break, and I use that loosely. The only thing my wife asked was like, Steve, can you please not work too much on Christmas?
Yeah.
And so I did. I didn't work too much on Christmas. Anyway, they start flying off the shelves because coach was really smart. Hey, look, we're not going to do visits in December. We're going to hold our water. You know, don't fire till you see the whites of their eyes until January.
Yeah, let me close with that comment too. He's prepping something that's pretty impressive. Go ahead.
So we held our water and we're building a board and it's not just watching tape, waiting to see what happens with these guys. It didn't matter who it was. If we liked them, we were shooting at them. I mean, we were reaching out to them and Leno was trying to dig up numbers. I mean, you know, it's not like a database where you have this stuff. He's got to go dig.
Yeah.
He'd make an incredible private eye, by the way. Yeah, I mean, you talk about, don't put Leno on my background. But we'd go after these guys. So as we were building the board, there were times when all of a sudden we're like, and we know how many we need at each spot. All of a sudden you're like, oh my goodness.
There's no defensive tackle. There's, we need five.
They're gone. Our best dudes are gone. What are we going to do? I remember being on, we didn't do all Zoom. I mean, I'd be sitting there with Gator. It'd be 11 o'clock my time, midnight his time. And we would literally be trying to watch, you know, just over speakerphone. You know, this guy, this certain cut up, and then I'd be one play ahead or one play behind or whatever. You know, it wasn't all Zoom, but they always stepped up and had a new batch.
Yeah.
And it was, you know,
sometimes
coach talks
the batch
about
is better.
And it was. I mean, it did. There were times when we thought, oh my goodness, this screwed up the whole board.
I can't sleep. There's times I couldn't sleep because there's no players.
Right.
And then the next morning you wake up and there's seven, you're watching like, oh yeah, they're better than the guys that we lost yesterday.
Yeah, it was a loaves and fishes type deal. And you talk about a God thing, some of the staff things that happened, you know, like you said, the video, you can do your video diary to document some of the things where, you feel like you were at times low and you can't, you know, you're never defeated by any stretch, but you're like, oh look, man, what are we going to do? And all of a sudden they were always the guys that here's a new batch. And they just kept doing it. I mean, the portal closed and they kept digging. We call them the dirt merchants because they're down there digging in the dirt and digging in the gutter. And they just did an incredible job. And I'm glad Coach talked about them. I should have talked about them earlier because they've been just so instrumental. Cole Peterson and Bo Spencer. I mean, just the work that they did. And Cole helped me a ton in the interview process. I mean, you know, just really vetting guys, digging up names, being a sounding board, being able to take things to coach, you know, trying to get everything squared away before we go to coach, you know, to free up, you know, his time and then say, okay, coach, this is what we've done. This is what we think, you know, we need you to know and do and whatnot. But I teased him, you know, on your iPhone, you have the nine things that you can pin, text strings that you can pin.
Yeah.
I had to remove two of them and put Cole and Gator. So now it's wife and kids and parents in some combination in the seven and then Cole and Gator. I mean, it was that you're tied into them.
Cole Peterson will bring the energy on the sidelines on a Saturday.
Well, you know, it's interesting is this defensive line thing. I'll go back to that real quick. You know, I think you guys interviewed
20 on the phone. Yep.
20 on the phone. We didn't interview our defensive line coach that we cannot name right now. Those are gods. Like, we didn't think he...
Yeah, he was the last one, and I truly did make him interview.
But, I mean, it wasn't an interview. No, it wasn't. It was like, we can't get this guy, but give him a call, right? And that's kind of how this thing happened. Let me finish these stats. So, for context, in the recruiting world, and this is probably different Power 4 to Group of 5, but the number that schools use for official visits per close is about a 4-to-1 ratio. Okay, so you bring in four kids, assign one, right? That's the old model. portal's a little less than that because you don't have time for that. Let's call it 3-1. If you go 3-1, you're batting at a very – it's like baseball. You're hitting 333, right? You're in the Hall of Fame if you go 3-1. Each OV, depending on where you're at, has a price tag to it. You're flying them and two others in. You're feeding them. You're putting them in hotels. You're driving. I mean, they're expensive, right? And economics is a huge deal at the Group of Five. You just don't have that much money. So a Power Four may spend $10,000 to $15,000 per OV. You guys can do the math, right? We're going to spend more $2,000 to $3,000 per OV. We're very economical about it without letting the family feel cheated. It's a great experience, but Cole and the rest of the department do a really good job of making sure we're economical or we're wise with what we're doing. We had to sign 40 players. So that means we had to bring 120 players in. Okay, for OVs, if you hit the 3-1 mark.
So 120 grand.
Yes.
Okay.
If you were going to just, if that's the number you're going. No, 40.
Double times two.
Times two.
Okay, 40 times two.
Yes.
Gotcha.
You knew the math now.
Yeah.
160, 240 grand, right? 240 grand it would cost to do this if we were to take that model. So we didn't take the model. We're like, we can't afford to do the model. Right? We can't. So they're only going to OV if they want us. Like we're in the final two, right? Or they're coming and we think because the vetting process has gone on that we're going to close them. Even saying that, that's just conjecture, right? You don't know if you can pull it off. Well, I just did the data last night. We OV'd 30 portal guys. Now, we didn't have to end up doing 40 because we got a bunch back out of the portal. And we got some really high-ceiling freshmen that were able to sign in the process of this. We OV'd 30 players. We signed 21. I've never seen anything like it.
That's efficiency.
It's wild. And then Steve talked about when you trip them. So our hit rate when we OV guys early is not very high. Why do you think that is? Because they take something and they go shop it. And you're going to lose the money and you're going to lose to a logo. Don't care who you are. You're going to lose the money and you're going to lose to a logo. So they come to us first. Our recruiting department has a very good reputation. They see them OV at us, and it's amazing. I can predict this every time. I'm never wrong. As soon as we OV a kid, I'll go to these five Power Fours and these four other big-time Group of Fives, and all nine will offer and trip the kid within 10 minutes. They have not even offered the kid. They probably haven't evaluated the kid. They're letting us evaluate him. They're letting us OV him. And they go, well, if that staff likes him, we trust them, we're going to offer an OV him. So you're fighting that too. So if you look at our hit rate now over five cycles, our percentages are very low on early OVs and astronomically high on late OVs. So what we did was we knew that going in. And this was hard for the coaches to trust. But I'm like, guys, this is not a suggestion. This is how we're doing it. And so we just tripped from the 3rd to the 11th, 17, I think it was. I think
17 on defense.
Yeah, 17 dudes in that period of time, plus offensive guys. So that 11-day stretch for us, 10-11-day stretch for us, like talk about putting on 15 pounds of recruiting dinners. But I mean, it was relentless because we had to put it at the back end because they had to go do their shopping first. And then agree to come sign up for something that wasn't the window shopping they had been doing. And I want to make it this simple because this is one of the themes is I only want people that will sign up for hard things, coaches and players. If you want the easy road, there's two roads. There's the wide road and the narrow road, Matthew 7, but it's also true in life. There's an easy road and a hard road. The easy road is comfortable. The easy road people on social media love because they like to be comfortable. The easy road leads to mediocrity. The hard road is dirty and grimy and gnarly and bumpy, and but I want those people. We turn this thing around because we got enough narrow road people, not wide road people. And the thing I'm really proud of, the staff, and I might get emotional, and the players that are coming in the building as we speak, they're narrow road people. And that's how we're going to turn this thing, because we're not going to be the longest. We're not going to be the fastest. We probably won't be the most talented. Probably won't have the best power twitch. Probably won't have any of the metrics that people use, but if we're the gnarliest and we're unbreakable and we're all narrow road people, now we'll fix it.
Love it. Coach Trent Dilfer, new defensive coordinator Steve Russ, welcome to Birmingham.
Thank you.
Go Blazers. Glad to have you. Excited to continue to get to know you. We continue. This is fascinating. It's the Inferno podcast.
The if in life, it's a world of possibilities. If you go for a night out with friends, if you can keep an eye on your money along the way, if you know you have overdraft protection with no fee transfers from savings, when you get a low balance alert, it's easier to say yes to fun. If that sounds good, try Regions Life Banking.
Stay ready for the if in life. Regions Bank embrace the if in life.
This is the Inferno Podcast, the official podcast of UAB Athletics. Blazer fans, this is the place each week to get an inside look into UAB Athletics. This episode of the Inferno Podcast is brought to you by the Alabama Department of Public Health and Pearl River Resort.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.